You're listening to another episode of Tap Outs and Touchdowns.
It's that time again, Bill. Everybody, welcome to another football episode of Tap Outs and Touchdowns. As always, it's your guy, Bully Rye. And alongside with me, as always, for the football shows is Banker Bill. Bill, what's going on, bud?
You know, man, I'm just excited, man. I'm really looking forward to this show. This show, the UFL primer. I mean, we talked about doing this. This was supposed to be episode one of the new season. Now I feel like we're out of the preseason. This is the regular season. Let's go. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's one of those things that we talked about doing for a while, and listen, I told you right before we came on the air, I have never felt so, like, I wouldn't say rushed, but, like, there's a lot going on, and there's a lot to learn. A lot to learn, y'all, about the UFL from a standpoint of, like, rules, from a rule standpoint, from a teams and players standpoint. So a lot of fun stuff to get to. But before we do, we've got to start the show off, is my favorite segment of the show, with Homer's Corner. And before we get started with that, just a reminder, if you're watching the show live, be it facebook.com/tapoutsandtouchdowns, YouTube, or X, leave a comment wherever it is that you're listening. Join the conversation with us tonight, because there's a lot to get into with the UFL. But Bill, your Homer's Corner has to do with non-football for I think maybe the first time ever. And that's with baseball opening day coming up. Go ahead. Take it away, Bill.
Yeah, I obviously the hat. Your mom always likes to talk about I have a hat collection. I do have a hat collection. This is one of my newer ones, though. I'm a Yankees fan. Usually that turns a lot of people off. I didn't want to admit that until now. Although you're a Braves fan, so it's, you know, that's kind of getting worse, too, because they're, yeah. But, yeah, opening MLB opening day tomorrow. Very excited. I actually get to wear my hat at work tomorrow. Looking forward to that. And I'm just we both play in a fantasy baseball league together. We did the draft a couple weeks ago on a Saturday morning. We drafted teams to get together. We don't have any money going down, but yeah, we get excited about baseball. So looking forward to that. Looking forward to the sound of baseball bats hitting baseballs. There's not much better sound in the world. So excited about football starting up this weekend, as well as the Major League Baseball season.
I'm right there with you, man. Listen,
I got one other thing, though, Ryan, that I wanted to bring up, though. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
Hey, I just wanted to bring up, you and I like to give each other, we'll call it the business, about Florida versus South Carolina. And I just wanted to bring up, we had been talking for a couple of weeks, as both of our colleges have hockey teams that are club teams. And we both won the national title this year. You sent it to me. I sent it to you. Like, hey, we're national champions. You said, hey, we're national championships. And then I said, wait a minute, we're national champions. Like, yeah, we didn't know.
But we found out. Like Spider-Man meme. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We found out you're in Division II and we're in Division III of club team college hockey. And they played an SEC tournament that we didn't even know was happening until the Florida Gators beat South Carolina Gamecocks.
That's where I should have muted you.
We're the real national. We're the real MVP, Ryan. We're the real national champion. But yeah, SEC champions in club college hockey. Good stuff.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Braves, because my mom got me this hat for Christmas like 2 years ago. It's got the Braves logo on the front. It's got a Gamecock logo on the side.
That's awesome.
So it's a pretty fun time. Listen, Shannon Smith in the chat saying he has an idea of what my Homer's Corner is going to be, and Volley Polly jumping the gun because I haven't gotten there yet. But absolutely. Absolutely, my Homer's Corner is going to be my guy, Kadeveon Clowney. I'm wearing a jersey in his honor today. Is finally making his way back home. The only way that I would have been happier is if Kadeveon Clowney had signed with the Detroit Lions. He grew up in Rock Hill, played high school in Rock Hill. High school teammate, if I'm not mistaken, of Stephon Gilmore, who the Panthers are also going to try to sign. So, like, we flip-flop, Bill. Like, I always try to throw curveballs and, like, talk women's basketball and soccer and baseball, and today we flipped it because I was talking football. Kadeveon Clowney signs a 2-year, $20 million contract with the Carolina Panthers, worth up to $24 million. And I'm gonna get on my soapbox here for a second, because there's a lot of people, yourself included, that think that this isn't that big of a deal. It's just Kadeveon Clowney is sort of a bust. Not sort of, but is a bust. He was the number one overall pick. Everybody thought he was going to be the best player in the world. People like to forget the fact that he had microfracture surgery after his rookie season. He stepped in a hole on some turf in a game his rookie year and basically gave him a 50-50 chance of never playing again. You know, the microfracture surgery was essentially what ended the NBA career of Greg Oden, former number one overall pick in the NBA. And so he's you know, the knock is that he's never exceeded 10 sacks in a season. He just got 9.5 sacks with the Ravens last year. You told me off air, tied for his most in his career so far. Listen, if you don't get excited about Jadeveon Clowney, if you're a Panthers fan, then I suggest you go out and watch some Jadeveon Clowney tape. Just because he's not getting 10 to 20 sacks a year doesn't mean he's not impacting the field when he's on the field. I know the other knock is that he can't stay healthy and play 17 full games. I think he played 17 games for the Ravens last year. Might not have been a starter for every game, but I digress. Dude is an elite defensive lineman against the run. He knows how to get after the quarterback despite not having big sack numbers. He's always putting pressure on the quarterback when he's on the field. Jadeveon Clowney is a huge get for the Carolina Panthers, who are in constant rebuild mode over the last few years and going forward in the next few years. Jadeveon Clowney, I believe, turns 31 this year. A two-year contract, there's a high likelihood this might be his last stop in the NFL. But super thrilled that Jadeveon Clowney is coming home and playing for the Carolina Panthers. And if you ever listen to the Cat Cave over on the Fans for Sports Network and Tobacco Road Sports Radio, .com, I told my co-hosts, Michael Davis and Shannon Smith, that if the Carolina Panthers did sign Jadeveon Clowney, that I'd be buying his jersey and I would be wearing it from training camp on through the entire season next year. And so I plan on doing just that. I hope he gets to rock the number 7 in Charlotte. Bill, oh, here we go. Pedro back in the chat. Love to see it when players go back home to the pros. Love it. Good to see you, Pedro. I hope you're excited to learn about some UFL tonight, because that's what we're talking about. The UFL 2024 season kicks off this weekend. If you've been living under a rock, the UFL is a combination of the XFL and the USFL. They merged in the offseason, and we get 8 teams out of the two leagues. Obviously, the DC Defenders, the San Antonio Brahmas, the St. Louis Battlehawks, and I'm missing one. The Houston Roughnecks were also the Houston Gamblers in the USFL. So they
well, that you have to explain. You have to explain that one. Okay. Yeah, that one's
so odd. Yeah, there were two Houston teams.
Arlington Renegades, you know, the champions. Like, that's the one you missed. That's
the one I missed.
Yeah.
It's right at the top. So yeah, the XFL division consists of the Arlington Renegades, the DC Defenders, the San Antonio Brahmas, and the St. Louis Battlehawks. They were 4 teams from the XFL last year. Mm-hmm. The USL division consists of the USFL champion Birmingham Stallions, the Memphis Showboats, the Michigan Panthers, and the Houston Roughnecks. Now, to further explain that, the Houston Roughnecks were the XFL team. The Houston Gamblers were the USFL team based in Houston. And when the merger happened, they decided to keep one team in Houston, and the Roughnecks became that team.
That's not all the details, though, Ryan.
Go ahead.
That team is actually the Houston Gamblers that are being rebadged as the Houston Roughnecks. That is the actual Houston Gamblers roster.
So the Houston Roughnecks were put into the deferral draft, I think.
The dispersal draft. Yeah. So they rebadged the Houston Gamblers. They kept the roster because the guys were still under contract, you know, from the previous seasons and things like that. So they kept the roster from the Houston Gamblers and rebadged them and used all the uniforms. I mean, they look exactly like the Houston Roughnecks. I guess they were a more popular look. And so they went with the Houston Roughnecks instead of the Gamblers, but they are the Gamblers organization. It's really strange. I didn't learn that until last night. I was like, what? Because they kept talking about all these Roughnecks that were in the dispersal draft. And I'm like, how is that possible?
Yeah.
They're already a team. And yeah, come to find out, it's actually the Gamblers.
It is interesting to note that. There was a question in the comment about the new kickoff rule that the NFL adopted from the XFL. Pedro asked if they're using the new kickoff rule. So I've actually got the list of rules up on the computer in front of me that I can read you guys. The kickoff rule, this is exactly from the UFL, the UFL.com. Kickoffs will look more like traditional college or NFL kickoffs, but will take place from the 20-yard line of the kicking team. A kickoff out of bounds will give possession to the receiving team 30 yards from the spot of the kickoff. or at the spot where the ball went out of bounds. A kickoff that is untouched by the receiving team may only be recovered by the kicking team up to 20 yards from the spot of the kick. So essentially, if you didn't watch the XFL last year and you're planning on watching the NFL, you don't have a running start from either team when a kickoff happens. You've got, I remind me the yard because it wasn't on the rule list here. The kicking team lines up, I believe, at the opponent's 40, 35, 40-yard line. The receiving team lines up like 10 or 15 yards away. Nobody moves until the returning player from the returner team catches the ball, and that's when everybody engages to try to stop the kickoff return. Listen, it's gotten a lot of hate from NFL, I guess, loyalists, NFL, I wouldn't call it historians, but NFL lovers don't like the rule. And if you didn't watch the XFL, I think it's a phenomenal rule because you actually get kickoff returns. You are avoiding the high impact plays that cause the most ferocious penalties in football. And so that's probably one of the biggest things that you can sort of start getting used to for the NFL season come this Saturday when the UFL kicks off. The other main rule that I wanted to mention, and I love this rule and a lot of people don't, it's the points after touchdown. The PATs are not kicks in the UFL. They adopted it from the XFL rules. The teams will have three scrimmage plays, which means run or pass, following a touchdown. From the 2-yard line, they are going for a 1-point try. From the 5-yard line, they are going for a 2-point conversion. And from the 10-yard line, they can go for a 3-point conversion. Bill, do you remember last year when there was, I forgot who it was, but one of the teams were coming, needed a miraculous comeback and used like a 3-point conversion to get the game like within one score. Like this adds an entirely new dimension to the game of football. Would you say
I
so?
I think St. Louis did it. If I remember correctly, I think.
Yeah, you're right.
St. Louis. Yeah. Yeah, it does. I will say this. It does add a new dimension, but there's something that feels comfortable about 10-7 and 14-10. And you lose. I mean, we've kind of lost that a little bit in the NFL because the extra points are harder. And yeah, you have the 2-point conversion. But in the UFL or the XFL last year, you had weird scores, you know, the 16, it's just odd stuff. So I like that there's a lot more options. There's a lot more scoring that can happen. If you want to win the game now, you can win the game. Even if they scored 2, you can go for 3. That's just wild. But I do. I guess the real fan, the traditionalist in me goes, I missed 7-7, you know, and that's harder to do in this league because scoring 1 point is a play from the 2-yard line, and that's obviously not guaranteed. So I don't know. It's fun. It does make it fun. I think the other one that they're doing, Ryan, is also they're sticking with the way that they're doing the onside kicks as well.
Yes, I love it.
Which is by far the best rule ever made from the NFL to the XFL. That was the best idea. And I think the days are numbered that the NFL does that as well. This year, they made it even easier, though. I think it was 15 yards last year.
It was 4th and 15. Yep. So let me explain it real quick. 4th and 12. Yeah. But before we go there, your Uncle Gary's in the chat saying, you guys are awesome. Pack your bags. You're going to Hollywood.
No, I'm going to Florida.
No.
Mexico.
So this is. I already did. Yeah. So this is tomorrow. It's called the alternate possession option. While onside kicks are allowed at any time during the game, teams will have an alternate option to retain possession in the fourth quarter. If a team is tied or behind during the fourth quarter, it may elect to retain possession after a score with a 4th and 12 from its own 28-yard line. Last year, it was 4th and 15 from their own 35. So,
it's easier, but more dangerous. Yeah.
You convert a 4th and 12, you keep the ball. If not, the other team gets the ball where you're marked down. I love it, man. I'm with you. I think onside kicks are days are numbered. Cause I think that because we've got this merged league this year, you're going to get more eyes on it because nobody watched the USFL. And if you watch the XFL, the people that were watching were in the stands because they were packing out outside of Vegas and Orlando that are no longer teams. They were packing out stadiums, and I can't wait to get into team by team and talk about what we can expect to see from the stadiums. Just a reminder, we got some viewers on tonight on all three platforms, X, YouTube, and Facebook. If you want to be a part of the conversation, you got questions that you want to ask about the UFL, it kicks off this Saturday. I know we're still in the middle of March Madness, but we get live football this weekend. So make sure you leave a comment wherever it is that you're watching and join the conversation.
People think we're crazy, Ryan. They do. Honestly, it's like, you guys really care about the UFO. Yes. I love football.
I want this to be, I want this show, and I've said this before, but I'm going to say it again. I want this show to be the exclusive place that you go to learn and talk and listen to about the UFL.
That's right.
Because your ESPNs, I mean, obviously they're the games coming. Are going to be.
Actually, there is a UFL section on ESPN.com now.
If there's a UFL, I don't care unless it's UFL fantasy football on ESPN. But yeah, of course there is, because they're partially hosting the games now. Yeah. I mean, this weekend you've got games on Fox and ESPN because of the TV rights for the UFL. But there's still the pundits, the Sports Center is not going to be covering it. Maybe like top plays that shows up. But you're not going to have the radio guys talking about it. You're not going to have the TV guys talking about it. So you tell your friends how much you enjoy watching UFL and tell them that, you know what, Tap Out Some Touchdowns are the ones that got me into this. Baker Bill, Bully Rye, those guys know what they're talking about. They know good football, and this is good football. So
it was good last year. XFL.
Yeah, that's basically the rules. There's not a whole lot of any other rules that we're not used to seeing. The overtime rules are a little different. Overtime will consist of alternating attempts to score from the opponent's 5-yard line.
That's a lot.
No kicks allowed. Yeah, it'll be best of three format or until a winner has been determined. It's kind of like the alternating 2-point conversion, but from the 5. And it's sort of like I don't know, kind of like a soccer shootout, if you will. So I enjoy that. Let's go ahead, Bill, and start talking about some teams. And let's start off with none other than the 2024 XFL champion, Arlington Renegades. This team came out of nowhere last year, sort of left for dead. They were the worst team to make the playoffs, and they sort of shocked everybody. Yeah, they sort of shocked everybody. And won the damn thing, Bill. I've got some players that I want to mention about this team. Some recognizable names from some people that have watched football in the past, be it college or the NFL. Their head coach is Bob Stoops. You may remember from Oklahoma. So some notable names, Bill. I'll let you start us off here. What you got to say about the XFL defending XFL champion Arlington Renegades going into 2024?
Well, I think if you look back to 2023 and you look back at Arlington Renegades winning the championship, as unlikely as it was, you remember we were all excited. Actually, we were not excited. We were excited about the playoffs, but we were very upset about the fact that the Seattle Sea Dragons were going to be held out of the playoffs with Ben DiNucci slinging the ball around. He was a great passer. Ja'Cory Pearson catching the ball. Those guys were held out of the playoffs for a terrible 4-6 Arlington Renegades team. But the Arlington Renegades had done something odd, and they had traded for a player named Luis Perez, the first trade in XFL history. That actually was the second one, because I think the first one was when was it Kurt Benkert or something? One of the players, one of the quarterbacks, got traded to San Antonio. I forget who it was.
Well, I know Quentin Normandy got released from Orlando because they thought he was giving away plays.
The playbook. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll talk about him though. He's on my list of players this year.
Yeah.
So
I can't wait. So they
traded for Luis Perez. Luis Perez was playing for the Vegas Vipers, wasn't having a great season. He was actually, I think Jalen McClendon had gotten him benched. McClendon outplayed him for the Vipers. So Luis Perez gets traded to Arlington Renegades, doesn't play very well to finish the season. They go 4-6 on the season, make the playoffs anyway because of the conference setup, and then they win their two playoff games. They beat the odds-on favorite DC Defenders, who had only lost one game all season to win the championship.
9-1.
Luis Perez was phenomenal in that game. 26 for 36, 288 yards, 3 touchdowns and no interceptions. I'm looking forward to watching him come back now that he's going to have a whole basically off season now, because they've already done training camp and whatnot. He's going to be in that Bob Stoops and that the Renegades offense all season. I think they're going to be a whole lot better team. So I'm pretty excited about them. Ryan, did you want me to go through all of the players that I'm looking forward to? Because there is a slew of here's what I'm looking forward to this season. I just want to tell you really quick.
Yeah,
they kept the rosters together for the most part, unless the player opted out and said, hey, I don't want to play in the United Football League this year. Take me off the roster. A couple of those guys I really like Lucky Jackson, not here anymore.
Yeah,
that's not good. But there are a lot of players that are coming back. So we have already seen these players that played last season, and now here they're going to be on the roster again this season. So we actually get to talk about them saying, hey, we know who this player is. There's some continuity here. And I think that's making this season a lot more fun.
Well, I do want to mention a couple things to touch on the fact that the Seattle Sea Dragons had the third best record in the XFL.
Yeah.
And not only did they not make the playoffs, but they didn't make the cut when it came to getting over to the UFL. But you touched on Luis Perez, and if you don't know who Luis Perez is, I want to read off some stats about Luis Perez. He was a quarterback from Texas A&M Commerce, 6'3", 220 pounder. He won a national championship in 2017 and a Harlan Hill Trophy that same year, a two-time first-team All-Lone Star Conference in 2016 and 17. He was a second-team All-American in 2017, two-time first-team All-American in 2016 and 2017. He's got a lot of impressive what's the word I'm looking for, Bill? Accolades from his college career, considering he didn't play for like a D1 school. He was AP first-team All-American, AP first-team All-American, and Ron Lynn's Division II Offensive Player of the Year. He was drafted, like you said, drafted by the Vegas Vipers and traded to Arlington. Led Arlington to the XFL Championship, re-signed in 2024. He also played for the LA Rams. He played in the, I don't know if you remember the AAF, but he played in the AAF for the Birmingham Iron. He also played in the Eagles. And in the 2020 edition of the XFL, he played for the LA Wildcats. So Luis Perez getting a full season, like you said, at the helm for Arlington. A couple of names that I want to mention. I want to mention first because we're obviously the show is based out of South Carolina, and I do have Clemson fan friends who come and listen to the show from time to time. Vic Beasley, outside linebacker, Clemson's all-time sack leader at with 33, 6'3", 246 pound outside linebacker. He was a two-time consensus All-American and former Defensive Player of the Year in the ACC. And he was a top 10 pick, number 8 overall by the Falcons in 2015. Also first-team All-Pro, Pro Bowl, and Deacon Jones Award winner in 2016 when he had 15 and a half sacks. He was drafted, I believe, also by Vegas last year, and we didn't hear his name ever.
I think he had half sack.
Yeah, but he is a name that again, fans of people around this area might know. Bill, there's a couple of guys that you might have jotted down. Who else you got to look forward to from this Renegades team? Well,
I did have Vic Beasley written down. He was their first pick in the Renegades first pick in the dispersal draft. If anybody doesn't know what the dispersal draft was, because there were 8 teams that were basically folding, those players went into a pool, and there was a 3-stage process where you had to pick them up or draft them. There was a super draft at the end. It's a little bit confusing. I've read it like 4 times and I'm still like, what are they talking about? So I'm sure there was some guy standing in front of a group of men going, this is how we're going to do this. And then they wrote down the rules later.
It looked a lot like the first ever fantasy football draft too.
It was terrible. Yeah. But Vic Beasley was their first pick. The number one pick for the Arlington Renegades. Other players that are coming back, Davion Smith. He has NFL experience running back out of Michigan. He actually played for the Dolphins for a little while. 102 carries, 321 yards last season. Not a great average, but one of the things we did see in the XFL when he was playing was sometimes the offensive line wasn't very good. I think that's going to get a little better this year with the smaller pool of players to be pulling from, because looking at the dispersal draft, a lot of the draft picks are offensive linemen. He also added 17 receptions, 147 yards. Dude can catch. Letty Brown comes back. He's his backup, 41 carries, 132 yards. And here's one, Ryan, that you'll remember. Morgan Ellison was picked up in the dispersal draft. You remember Morgan Ellison for the Seattle Sea Dragons? We talked about him. He got hurt. Yep. He was like the linchpin in that offense, him and Ja'Cory Pearson. And Morgan Ellison got picked up by the Arlington Renegades. So I have a feeling Morgan Ellison might be the starter by the time we hit Saturday. We'll find out, though. They haven't released any kind of depth charts or anything, just roster.
I know, it's terrible.
He is on the roster. He had 52 carries for 254 yards, 4.88 yards per carry, and 1 touchdown for Seattle before he got injured. He only played 5 games. And then also coming back in the wide receiver room, Tyler Vaughns, the Arlington Renegades leading receiver, 31 catches, 302 yards, 1 touchdown. Remember, that's only in 10 games. I know it doesn't look big. You're like, oh, 31 catches, terrible. But it's only in 10 games.
6'2", 190-pound wide receiver out of Southern Cal.
Pretty big dude, yeah.
Played with both the Colts and the Steelers in his NFL career. So it'll be interesting to see what he can do with a full season with Luis Perez throwing in the ball.
Yeah, we talked about how Luis Perez obviously picked it up towards the end of the season and was really good in the championship game. In that championship game, Tyler Vaughns went 8 catches, 83 yards, and a touchdown. So those are stats you'd not, you know, laugh at if you saw that every single week. Let's see. The team also picked up Deontay Burnett, wide receiver from the Houston Roughnecks that got closed down. Burnett actually had 27 receptions for 378 yards and 6 touchdowns for the Roughnecks last season. If you remember the Roughnecks, they couldn't get a quarterback to play for that team. So they had bad quarterbacks all over the place, and he still had a pretty decent season. That's exciting. And then the other one, Ryan, I know we can't go without talking about this guy, but the Chicken Man. The raw
tight
chicken
end from Auburn. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
the raw chicken man is back. Sal Cannella, tight end. He was the leading receiver for this team last season. 42 catches, 415 yards. Didn't score a touchdown in the regular season, but he did in the championship game. 5 catches for 71 yards. He's actually the only tight end on their roster. So yep. Sal Cannella, yeah, he's doing some work. He actually looked to go to the NFL, I guess, in the offseason. Didn't really latch on anywhere, but he was pretty fun to watch last season in the XFL. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, 6'5" tight end. I'll mention one more guy. He's not really any position player, but they've also got Marquette King back, a punter from Fort Valley.
Oh, the punter, 35 years old.
Second team All-Pro in 2016 in the NFL, and he led the NFL in punting yards back in 2014. So we get another opportunity to play some more football. There's your Arlington Renegades, again, head up by Bob Stoops. Let's move on to our next team. And that's the other championship team from this league, the 2023 USFL champion Birmingham Stallions. Matter of fact, they're back-to-back USFL champions before the merger, and they were one of the teams with the hub city last year. They were one of the four teams that actually played home games, quote unquote, last season. I want to mention a couple guys on this team because there's some real local ties. Their head coach is Skip Holtz. If you don't know who that is, I don't know what to tell you. Son of Lou Holtz, legendary coach, national championship with Notre Dame, former South Carolina Gamecock head coach. But he's got two former Clemson Tigers on this team on offense, and Deion Kane, wide receiver out of Clemson, 6'2", 202. He was a sixth-round pick by the Colts in 2018, and he was the USFL championship game MVP last year. He had 3 touchdowns for the Birmingham Stallions last year. And then Amari Rogers, a wide receiver out of Clemson, 5'9", 212 as a senior at Clemson. He had 77 receptions for 1,020 yards and 7 touchdowns. He was a third-round pick by the Green Bay Packers, played with the Packers, Texans, and Colts in the NFL, and then signed in December with Birmingham to get another shot. But listen, Birmingham was really like the only team in the USFL, I should say, that seems sort of like nobody can beat them. I know that I couldn't tell you what their record was last season, but I do remember
they were
nine and one,
maybe 8. They were pretty good. Yeah, they were pretty good.
It was that team that, like, for whatever reason, I don't know if it was coaching, if it was the fact that they knew who to get, but they just seemed to be the team to beat, you know, for the last few years in the USFL. So I'm curious to see what they bring to the UFL this year, Bill.
I'm excited. Here's one thing though. Their starting quarterback, who had been the starting quarterback for the last two seasons, Alex Magoo, he caught on in the NFL. I believe he was on a practice squad. He might have made a roster at some point. He's no longer with the team.
Mr. Magoo found an NFL team? Yeah.
Yes. He ended up catching on in the NFL. He was very good for the Birmingham Stallions the last two seasons. He is gone. So they are now dealing with, ready for the quarterbacks? Jamar Smith was his backup. He's still there. And now Kansas State star Adrian Martinez. Came from Nebraska and he went to Kansas, transferred to Kansas State, star for Kansas State. He is now on the Birmingham Stallions roster. And you'll remember this name, Ryan, Matt Corral. Matt Corral also on the Birmingham Stallions roster. Again, depth charts not released, but I'm sure we have a quarterback controversy in Birmingham. Maybe we'll see a two-headed quarterback system, but it'll be fun to see who wins that battle.
Real quick about Matt Corral.
Martinez, a lot of hype. Corral, obviously, fourth round draft pick.
Third round pick by the Panthers, but in the bowl game, his final year at Ole Miss, he busted up his knee, so didn't really get a chance to play for Carolina. Mm-hmm. He tied a single game touchdown record with Ole Miss in his senior season, where he had 3 passing and 4 rushing touchdowns. So a dual threat quarterback when he was at Ole Miss, but unfortunately with Carolina, because you know you had. With the injuries that he was dealing with, and then they go and draft Bryce Young, he did latch on with the Patriots for a short period of time. I hope Matt Corral gets to catch on in Birmingham, and we get to see what he could have done in the NFL.
Exactly. See, these are the things that are interesting. I want to watch Adrian Martinez play because he was good in college. Matt Corral, obviously very good in college. I think you might get some decent quarterback play out of these guys. You said they added Amari Rodgers. They also added, and I don't know if you recognize this, Gary Jennings Jr.
Yes.
The fourth round pick by the Seattle Seahawks, I believe, in 2019. They signed him as well. They pretty much had to remake their entire wide receiver group. I don't think any of their – very few of their wide receivers came back. Leading wide receiver Davion Davis is gone. So, yeah, they're going to have some different talent on the field. Birmingham Stallions, one of the best teams in – obviously the best team in the USFL last season, going to be a little bit different look this year. So, I'm not sure you would expect them to be as fantastic as they were last season, but still a lot of interesting storylines going on with that team.
Well, I mean, there's a couple more names that I want to mention, and I'm going to go through it really quickly. Jordan Thomas, he's listed as a wide receiver out of Mississippi State, but he's 6'5", 277 pounds. He played all over the place in the NFL, but he was listed as a linebacker for the Carolina Panthers during training camp last season. So interesting to see what he does for this team. A couple of running backs, Ricky Person out of NC State, 53 touchdowns and 3,625 all-purpose yards at his time in NC State. And Larry Roundtree, running back out of Missouri, 5'10", 210-pound running back, holds the Missouri school record for rushing yards in a career with 3,720. He was a sixth-round pick by the Chargers back in 2021. And then a couple of fun names. You talk about, I guess, just fun football names. Chris Blewett, the kicker from Pittsburgh, all-time leader in field goals and second all-scoring. Words are hard, Bill. Second all-time in scoring.
You said Blewett. That's what happened. A kicker named Blewett, like he blew it. Oh, that's not what you want to have.
He played with the Maulers, the Pittsburgh Maulers of the USFL, and tied a league record with 5 field goals made in a game in their first win of the season last year, named Special Teams Player of the Week. And he was selected by Birmingham again in the dispersal draft this year. And then let's go to defense for a second. Taco Charlton, a defensive end out of Michigan. 6'6", 270-pounder, first team all Big Ten back in 2016. He was the 28th overall pick by the Dallas Cowboys in 2017. His NFL career contains 11.5 sacks, 95 tackles, and 4 forced fumbles. And he had stints with the Cowboys, Dolphins, Chiefs, Steelers, and Bears in the NFL, signed with the Stallions in March. So we talk a lot about offense so far, and I want to bring a defensive name because when I saw Taco Charlton, it sort of stuck out like Vic Beasley did, his former first round draft pick.
Yeah,
you know, sort of getting a second opportunity here in the UFL. So again,
don't forget their tight end also, Ryan. Their tight end is a fantastic Jace Sternberger.
Yeah.
Come on, guy. 33 receptions, 517 yards, and 7 touchdowns last year for the Birmingham Stallions. Their top pick in the dispersal draft was a tackle, Calvin Ashley from the New Jersey Generals. So, I mean, there we talk about the offensive lines getting better. This might be one of those situations.
This makes me I know we're only halfway through the show, but this makes me so excited about this weekend. And the best part about it is we're gonna pick the games, and the two teams we've already talked about, the XFL and the USFL champion, play each other on Saturday afternoon. So I can't wait to see that. Let's go over to what may turn into my favorite team in the UFL, and that's the DC Defenders.
No, you can't do that. That's one I'm leaning towards. That's honestly the team I've been looking at. DC. They're kind of
we can finally have a team that both of us root for together, because the DC fans knew how to party last year. First of all, they were ready for some better football and better ownership. And so the DC Defenders fans showed out in DC last year, had a decent season last year. Again, they were one of the 4 teams in the playoffs at the end of the season. Matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, they lost the XFL championship game to Arlington. We talked about it earlier. Head coach Reggie Barlow finished 9-1 and was named XFL Coach of the Year last season, despite the loss. I've only got 4 names written down, Bill, but give me all the beer snakes that I can handle. Let's see what we got here in the chat. The beer snakes. Yeah, Shannon Smith, the beer snakes. Give me all the beer snakes that I can handle. So it's a fun environment considering it's sort of like minor league, football. Bill, what are your thoughts on the season upcoming for the DC Defenders?
Only one name really sticks out. Jordan Tamu.
Yep.
Starting quarterback.
Ole Miss.
Here's the thing. So he was the 3rd in the XFL in passing. He was 7th in the XFL in rushing. He threw for 1,878 yards, 14 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. He had 67 carries for 301 yards, 3 touchdowns, 4.5 yards per carry. He did not play that well in the championship game. They lost the championship game to the Arlington Renegades. He threw 3 interceptions in that game. They've brought in a quarterback. Jalen McClendon comes in from the Vegas Vipers. It makes you wonder. I know we love Tom. We really had fun watching that guy, but he obviously did not have a good championship game. Jalen McClendon comes in. He had a really good season last year. I believe he threw for 5 touchdowns. I think it was 873 yards in 4 games, 5 touchdowns and an interception for the Vegas Vipers. And obviously unseated Luis Perez down there. See if he can do it again to Jordan Ta'amu. Quarterback battle in D.C. And then you can't go to talk about the D.C. Defenders without talking about Abram Smith.
Yeah, there was some bad news. Real quick, Shannon Smith, Ta'amu
for MVP. I like that. I think he'll be even better this year.
There was some news about Abram Smith because the DC team last year was highly hyper-focused on the run game.
Yes.
And there was a week that we talked about it on this show, like, well, they don't need to pass the ball because all they're going to do is run it.
You're not going to tell me there's something wrong with Abram Smith, right?
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
No!
Abram Smith, I believe he led the XFL in rushing last year.
He did.
But was put on IR earlier this month with an ACL injury. They fear that he might miss the entire season.
I did not see this.
The UFL. I told you it was sort of a rush job, and it was one of those things when I was pulling stats and pulling stuff. Abram Smith, the running back out of Baylor. Again, he was a very big part of the DC Defenders offense last year.
I'm so sort sad right now.
Sort of got banged up at the end of the season, had an opportunity to sign with an NFL team, but he didn't actually make a 53-man roster. But Abram Smith was a baller last year for the DC Defenders. A couple guys that I want to
157 carries, 788 yards, 5 yards per carry, 12 touch. A baller is an understatement. That was in 10 games.
Yeah.
So play a full NFL season with those stats and you've got a really, really nice season. But yeah, that bumps me out. Thanks, Ryan. Now I'm sad.
Sorry. Well, let's talk about some other players then. Shall we? We already talked about the XFL Offensive Player of the Year in Jordan Ta'amu.
Yes.
He actually got on with an NFL team as well, but he was released and he signed.
A lot of the top players in the XFL or USFL actually had some training camp time with at least practice squad time. Yeah, with NFL teams, but a lot of them came back.
Yep. Let's look at Puka Williams, wide receiver out of Kansas, 5'9", 177 pounds, a small guy listed as a wide receiver, but played running back in college. And he was the first team all Big 12 as a freshman running back. Look at wide receiver Kiki Kuti, wide receiver out of Texas Tech, a little bit bigger than the running back or wide receiver Puka Williams, 5'11", 180. His first team all Big 12 in 2017, fourth round pick by the Texans the following year. He was last waived by the Dolphins in 2023 and signed with the Defenders back in February. And you know I'm not going to go a show without Homer and out.
Wait, DJ Swearinger. Hang on a second. I know I've got Swearinger listed too here.
Yeah.
But Kiki Kuti, you said he was a fourth round pick for Houston. He actually had a season where he had 33 catches in the NFL. So his stats for the NFL are 85 catches for 966 yards and 4 touchdowns. So pretty good player. So we'll see how he does.
Yeah, decent career in the NFL.
Yeah,
and now he gets Jordan Ta'amu, who was the XFL Offensive Player of the Year last year, throwing him the ball. So let's see what he can do. And again, let's homer out here for a second. DJ Swearinger, safety out of South Carolina, second team All SEC back in 2012, a second round pick by the Houston Texans, did play some time with the Washington at the time. It was the Washington Redskins, I believe. He made a Pro Bowl, and the Washington had cut him. And before he got picked up somewhere else, he was threatening to wear a Gamecock helmet to the Pro Bowl, which would have been really fun for me. His NFL career, 425 tackles, 4.5 sacks, 9 forced fumbles, 14 interceptions in the NFL. Real quick, Volley Polly, do you think fans out west are miffed that they weren't represented? I'm assuming are you talking about teams represented out
teams.
West?
Teams. I mean, all the teams are in Texas.
Texas and the East Coast.
Yeah.
It's a possibility. I know Seattle fans are probably pretty upset. I know people in Vegas didn't care because they didn't show up at the games to begin with. But I would argue
Seattle didn't have great attendance. I know we talk about how great Seattle fans are for the Seahawks and all that stuff, but their attendance numbers were not fantastic. You know, we watched that all season long. And Seattle was down there close to Orlando. Because Orlando averaged over 10,000. And Seattle averaged like 12. They did not show up. So if they're upset, there's not many of them.
Well, DC won, I believe it was North and South, and DC won their division in the regular season last year. Now, again, finished the season 9-1, played in the XFL championship. Like you said, some familiar faces back for this team. We'll see if they can repeat the performance they had last year. Let's move on here. Let's go a little further west from us, and let's talk about the Houston Roughnecks, formerly known as the Houston Gamblers, also known as the Houston Roughnecks of the XFL.
So confusing.
It is the Houston. You mentioned it at the top of the show. The Houston Gamblers just changed gimmicks and became the Houston Roughnecks. So the Houston Gamblers team stayed together, and the Roughnecks went into the dispersal draft. But still, same here. I've got one, two, three.
You know
I've got
like,
five
Ryan,
names.
It's like the Browns leaving and becoming the Ravens, and then the Browns become the Browns
becoming
in the
same an expansion
season.
Team.
It's kind of like that. That's kind of what. Yeah, it's really weird. It's sort of strange.
The head coach of the Houston Roughnecks is C.J. Johnson. He was the head coach at Tulane from 2012 to 2015. He's got a bunch of coaching experience. But, Bill, Houston at one point, that was my team last year in the XFL. I really wanted to see them do well. My old neighbors, shout out if they ever watch the show, Billy and Elizabeth. They're from Houston. They live in Houston. When I got stuck in Houston last year, I got to see them for a short period of time. So Houston was my team, and they sort of let me down. Like, they weren't as good as we were expecting them to be. We get, obviously, this isn't the same Houston with some roster turnover. A couple of quarterbacks that are on this roster that kind of stand out. But, Bill, I'm going to let you start us off here again. What's your outlook for the Houston Roughnecks, and who are some of the players you're watching for on this roster?
I'm not predicting anything, but let's say this. Their last season's top quarterback for the Houston Gamblers was Kenji Bihar. He is not returning. Now you get quarterbacks playing for the Houston Roughnecks. You'll know some of these names. Jared Guarantano, ex-University of Tennessee star, was not picked anywhere in the NFL. He's getting an opportunity to play in the UFL. And also, here's one that's kind of exciting. You might remember this guy. San Antonio Brahma last year, Reed Sinnett played in one game. I kept saying how great he was. He was really good in the preseason for the Miami Dolphins like 2 or 3 years ago. I think he set the Miami Dolphins preseason passing record with like 330 yards or something in a game. He didn't play the whole game, but he set the record. So he's on the roster. And then another quarterback, Nolan Henderson, a former University of Delaware quarterback. I don't feel great about their quarterback prospects. I really don't know. I feel like Reed Sinnett's probably going to be the starter there.
And yeah,
when he played for San Antonio last year.
You mentioned Guarantano. He finished his career in college at Washington State.
Right.
After he sort of fizzled out with Tennessee.
Backing up Cam Ward. Backing up Cam Ward. Yeah.
And then Reed Sinnett, he was first team all PFL in 2019. You mentioned he played for San Antonio of the XFL before he broke his foot that ended his season. And he was claimed off of the UFL waivers from San Antonio. He re-signed with San Antonio, who then cut him and was claimed here by Houston to wind up in Houston. I don't have a whole lot of stats, but I did want to mention the name Kiki Chisholm. He's a wide receiver out of Missouri, 6'5", a big body wide receiver, and a guy that was, again, another draft pick from the Carolina Panthers, Corn Elder, a cornerback in Miami, Florida, 5'10", 185-pound defensive back, all ACC in 2016. There's a name that I wrote down that I think you wrote down as well that you may want to talk about more so than me. So I'm gonna give you back the floor, Bill, because I started saying, I'm like, nah, man, I'm gonna give him his shine. Go ahead, Bill.
That's right.
Tell me about one of the running backs here for the Houston Roughnecks.
Houston Gambler top rusher Mark Thompson returns out of the University of Florida last season. Had 135 carries, 655 yards, 4.85 yards per carry, 14 touchdowns. He was a pretty good running back last year for the Houston Gamblers. He'll be back. Going to watch him. Also, his backup, TJ Pledger, he's back as well. He had 49 carries, 197 yards, and 3 TDs last season. Top receiver Justin Hall returns from the Houston Gamblers team. He had 47 catches, 513 yards, and 4 touchdowns last season. And they picked up Pittsburgh Mauler top receiver Isaiah Henney in the dispersal draft. So he led the Pittsburgh Maulers in receivings. He was receivings the ball. He had 46 catches, 474 yards, and 3 touchdowns. So, what I like about these teams is because they consolidated all these teams, you've got these players that were really good on other teams, and now the pool is smaller. I'm kind of excited about this. I feel like the talent level is going to rise a little bit because there's only 8 teams versus 16, so now you're getting the best players are now on these teams. It's almost like all-star teams. Their top pick in the dispersal draft was Paul Adams, tackle from the New Orleans Breakers, so another offensive lineman. Here we go again. We're trying to make the offensive lines better, so... We'll see how it's going to go in Houston. I'm a little nervous because I feel like their quarterback play is going to be a little bit lower than some of the other teams we've been talking about.
I've got faith in Reed Snead. Like, I'm with you. I think he's going to be the starter for this team, quarterback out of San Diego. 6'4" quarterback, so a tall guy. You talked about Mark Thompson from Florida. He was last year's USFL Offensive Player of the Year, all USFL, and the rushing touchdowns leader last season as well. So, listen, even if the quarterback play isn't there, we saw the DC Defenders last season didn't need a lot of quarterback play for much of the year, and they were able to go 9-1. So maybe they lean on Mark.
Sure.
Maybe they lean on Mark Thompson.
Wow.
And that running game.
Tomu didn't throw for a ton, but he was a rushing monster. Like every time he needed a first down, he ran for the first down. It was we'll see.
No,
it's going to be what's so exciting, man. It's going to be so much fun. Who's going to be the starter? If you've listened to the show, you're like, well, Ryan and Bill talked about this. Who's the guy? Is it Reed Sinet? Is it Justin Guarantano? I don't know. We're going to find out. We're going to find out this weekend.
I am so excited about it. And you're not going to be here, so I'm going to have to watch it by myself. But I'm really excited. Let's move on here. Memphis, the Memphis Showboats, another one of the hub cities in the USFL from last season. Head coach John DeFilippo. I've got, again, a short list of names here. Bill, you probably know more about what they did in the USFL last year. I will mention the one guy I do want to mention off the top of that. Well, there's two people. Again, local talent, local prospects here. DeAndre Overton, a 6'4", 210-pound wide receiver out of Clemson. 777 yards with 7 touchdowns at Clemson. He's played in the CFL, the European League of Football, the USFL, and was selected in the dispersal draft by Memphis this year. And then former safety from Clemson, TJ Green, was selected by Arlington in the 2023 XFL draft, but signed instead with the Birmingham Stallions of the USFL, and then they turned around and cut him. And then signed here in Memphis in May of 2023. Bill, there's a running back on this roster that I want to talk about, but what's your outlook for Memphis this coming season?
I like this team, Ryan, and I'm going to try. I have a lot written down about Memphis Showboats because there's a lot of fun happening here. You ready?
Yeah.
All right. So all new quarterbacks for Memphis this season. They didn't bring back their whatever quarterback. I didn't even look to see what quarterback it was because I'm excited about who they have. They actually drafted in the dispersal draft the Philadelphia Stars starter, Case Cookus, who was pretty good last season. Cookus was in his second season in the NFL. This will be his third. He went 218 of 347 for 2295, so 2295 yards, 15 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. He was up and down a little bit, but actually, I think at the end of the season, he took the job for, I forget there was another guy starting for that team, and he took the job from him. Cookus will battle Troy Williams from the Utah Utes and Josh Love, who started for the Michigan Panthers last season.
I want to talk about Josh Love for a second. He was the Mountain West Conference player, the offensive player of the year back in 2019.
You've got all the college stats. We're past that, man. These are professional football players. No, I don't care about college.
They're only 5 years removed. He was first team All Mountain West in 2019, but in the USFL, he holds the record for highest completion percentage in a regular season game with Michigan last year at 90%. But I don't know if he's going to get to start right away as he was only signed.
Another QB battle, man. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. Or two-headed.
He was signed, maybe two or three, but he was only signed 2 weeks ago. So I don't think he's going to start right away, but I think he's got a shot to start. I don't want to take it over again, but I do want to talk about this guy. Well, there's three guys that I have left, but two guys I really want to talk about. Darius Victor, running back from Towson. He's a smaller guy, 5'8", 209 pounds, but he was the 2022 USFL Offensive Player of the Year with the New Jersey Generals and also led the league in rushing touchdowns that season. He was the all USFL that season as well. But again, you go back to his days in college, he was first team all CAA in 2014, second team in 2015, CAA Rookie of the Year his freshman season, drafted it by Memphis in the dispersal draft. So I'm really curious to see if he can put up some numbers like he did 2 years ago.
He did lead the New Jersey Generals last season in rushing, Ryan. He had 100 carries for 551 yards. So give him the ball a little bit more. I mean, he averaged 5.5 yards per carry.
Yeah. Is there anybody else? Like I said, I've got two guys really quick. Sage Surratt, tight end out of Wake Forest, 6'3", 250-pound tight end. First team All-ACC back in 2019, and he was part of the Birmingham 2022 USFL Championship team. And then one other guy, he was all USFL last year, 2023, John Atkins, a nose tackle out of Georgia. All this defensive talent that Georgia's put out in the NFL, this guy's sitting meddling around here in the USFL or in the UFL now, but he was all USFL last season. Curious to see what he can do with this defense. Bill, anything else? Anybody else that people should look out for when it comes to the Memphis Showboats?
Yes. Do you know who led the Memphis Showboats in receiving last year? And I'm going to give you a name because I know you don't know the answer.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Vinny Papale.
Vinny Papale.
Does that sound familiar? Sound familiar. His father was Vince Papale, or is Vince Papale. His career was the basis for the 2006 film Invincible with Mark Wahlberg.
No kidding.
Yes. Vinny Papale led the Memphis Showboats last season, receiving 33 catches for 345 yards and 3 touchdowns. He has returned, which is kind of cool. So you're going to look, you know, if you watched the movie in 2006, well, I think a lot of people did because it was a football movie, right? So we watched it. This is that guy's kid. That's pretty cool. They also drafted a couple guys in the dispersal draft because they had to remake their wide receiver room as well. They picked up Jonathan Adams in the first round of the dispersal draft. He was second in New Orleans for the New Orleans Breakers and receiving last season with 41 catches for 511 yards and 2 touchdowns. D. Anderson's coming with them. He was third on that team in receiving. So they've got a bunch of receivers now. And they also brought over Sage Surratt, the tight end from the New Orleans Breakers. Yep. He was the top receiver on that team. He had 50 catches for 552 yards and 1 touchdown last season in New Orleans. Their top pick in the dispersal draft was actually Jonathan Adams from the New Orleans Breakers. So, yeah, that Memphis is going to be fun based on who the quarterback's going to be. And I'm going to be looking for the kid Papale, man. That's pretty cool that his dad was the actual guy that was in the, you know, the that the movie was about.
That's phenomenal. That's an amazing story. Yep, there's your Memphis Showboats for 2024. Let's go over. Let's go up north to Michigan with the Michigan Panthers again in the USFL division. Sort of an underwhelming season last year. Head coach Mike Nolan, former defensive coordinator in the NFL for many years, former head coach for the San Francisco 49ers. I've got 4 names written down, Bill. So I'm gonna let you kind of take us off here and let us know what you're looking forward to from Michigan this season.
Well, I'm not sure what they're gonna do at quarterback. Honestly, their first 2 quarterbacks are not starting. EJ Perry is their top returning quarterback. He was the third stringer last season. They've got Brian Lewerke from Michigan State. I don't know if you remember his name, but he was the Michigan State University quarterback a while ago. He was on the roster last season, did not record a stat. And they've also got a player, Danny Etling. I honestly don't know a tremendous amount about him. He joins the roster. He's been on NFL practice squad since he graduated from LSU in 2017.
So I'll give you some notes.
They're going to be playing a quarterback.
I'll give you some notes on Danny Etling. Like you said, 6'3", 220-pound quarterback out of LSU. He also played for Purdue from 2013 to 2014. 7,076 yards passing in his collegiate career, 43 touchdowns, 19 interceptions. He was a 7th-round pick by the New England Patriots back in 2018, was waived, and he signed with Michigan back in 2023. So a pretty impressive collegiate career, albeit the years that he was at LSU, they were sort of down years. But, I mean, 7,000 passing yards is nothing to scoff at from when it comes to SEC football. You know what I'm saying? So, sure. I mean, listen, I don't have a lot of another. I do want to mention one name because he's a local talent. He's local, and he played college in South Carolina, but not for who you think. Noah Dawkins is a linebacker, 6'1", 235 pounds, a native of Spartanburg, South Carolina, set the Burns High School sack record with 23 sacks. First team all SoCon in 2018 with the Citadel is on this roster. So I wanted to mention that because there's not very often do we get to talk about like truly local talent.
That's cool.
There's a big body wide receiver from Southern Oregon, Jordan Sewell, 6'6", 205-pound wide receiver. And then a first team all Sunbelt back in 2019 running back from Louisiana and Raymond. I'm going to butcher this last name. Calais, 5'9", 188 pounds. He was with the LA Rams when they won Super Bowl. I believe it's 51 or LV1. You're going to have to help me out with the Roman numerals. But unfortunately, he signed with Michigan back in 2023, and he was suspended about 2 weeks ago. He's on the league suspended list on March 10th. So I don't think he's going to be starting at the week 1 starting running back for
I'll give you a running back, Ryan.
Let's go. Let's hear it.
They have a whole new running back room down here, well, up there in Michigan. And the headliner, I believe, in that room is Wes Hills, who led the New Orleans Breakers last season in rushing. He had 180 attempts for 680 yards and 10 touchdowns for the Breakers. They picked him up in the dispersal draft. I believe he will probably be the starter, and he's a pretty good one. Obviously, yeah. Having that many yards and not too bad at all. Trey Quinn is their top returning wide receiver. 37 catches, 439 yards, and 4 touchdowns last season. Big pickup for this team in the dispersal draft, wide receiver Corey Coleman from the Philadelphia Stars, Ooh. Who led the USFL in receiving last season with 51 catches, 668 yards, receiving yardage, and 4 touchdowns. Huge pickup for this team as they needed the receiving help because they obviously they're remaking their wide receiver room. It's like the wide receivers just keep turning over. All the teams seem to be losing wide receivers all over the place. They also picked up Devin Gray, who was at second on the Philadelphia Stars in receiving with 50 catches, 502 yards, and a touchdown. Obviously, Philadelphia caught a lot of passes last year. Top returning tight end is Cole Picatinny. Say that 3 times fast.
That's a fun name.
He had 21 catches for 239 yards and 5 touchdowns. Their top pick in the dispersal draft was Adonis Alexander, defensive back from the New Orleans Breakers. I know nothing about him.
Yeah.
But he's got a great first name.
I'm glad you mentioned Corey Coleman because I thought is who I thought he was. He was former
Baylor.
He was a first-round draft pick out of Baylor by the Cleveland Browns, played with the Patriots, Giants, and yeah, man, wow. Good for him landing here in Michigan.
That's right. Good for him. This will be his second season in the spring football leagues last season, obviously leading the USFL in receiving yardage. So that's a pretty good pickup for Michigan Panthers. Obviously, we don't know what they're going to do at quarterback, but they do have some folks to throw to, so it should be pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, interesting to see what Michigan can do because, again, one of the underwhelming teams in the USFL last year, now in the USFL division here at the UFL. Let's move on. We're running late, and we're going to have to run late tonight because we got 2 more teams to get to.
The primer always does. Yeah.
There's a lot. Listen, there's a lot to learn about the UFL and names to remember going into this weekend's game. So let's go over to San Antonio, the San Antonio Brahmas. If you don't know what a Brahma is, it's basically the Rock's nickname. Coming out of WWE was the Brahma Bull. He had a Brahma Bull tattoo on his arm for the longest time. He expanded it a few years ago. So it's the San Antonio Brahmas, head coached by a familiar name, Wade Phillips, who is still out here coaching. He's got to be like 84 years old now at this point. I have got a ton of names on for this roster because a lot of guys that we remember seeing playing in the XFL last year. But did you pick up the quarterback out of Townsend that's on the roster?
I did. I absolutely did.
Listen, I've given this guy so much grief
on this
show.
Are you
going to
give
him
a dumpster fire? Are you going to give him a dumpster fire?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to give him if he is any worse than his brother, then Ooh. He is beyond like he is the like the kindling that starts the fire. Oh, Tom no. Flacco. That's right. Tom Flacco, the brother of Joe Flacco. So he was, believe it or not, left football for a while and was a 32nd round pick by the Philadelphia Phillies, is a quarterback on the roster for the San Antonio Brahmas, even though he's probably not going to play ahead of Quentin Dormady, quarterback Central Michigan, also played at Tennessee from 2015 to 2017. But we talked about it earlier in the show. There was controversy in Orlando of the XFL last season because he was rumored that he was giving away the playbook to opposing teams. He was released and then re-signed the next day. When they found out that it wasn't true, in 2023, he had a 69%, 68.9 to be specific, completion percentage, 7 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. He was drafted first in the super draft portion of the dispersal draft, and the former quarterback, San Antonio Brahmas, Jack Cohn, was released, and Quentin Dormady was named the starter of this team. So that's the one player that we know is going to be starting at quarterback for San Antonio. Bill, give us some stuff to look forward to with San Antonio this coming season. Well,
Kurt Bankert, the quarterback, is still on the roster. He made 1 start for San Antonio last season. It wasn't very good at all. 181 yards passing, 1 touchdown, 2 interceptions. Now, you'll remember Kurt Bankert because we got excited when he got signed last year because he actually made the roster of the Green Bay Packers for a while when Aaron Rodgers was the quarterback there. He was a third string quarterback for the Green Bay Packers. Unfortunately, has not played well in his time here in the, we'll call it the Spring Football League, so the UFL. But he's going to be on the roster as well. Like you said, Dormady is the starter. I'm looking forward to that because that is a holdover from my Orlando Guardians, who no longer exists. So I'm looking forward to watching him play. Bryson Aline how do you say that? Aliyin, the running back, drafted first round of the dispersal draft, played for the Roughnecks last season, 43 carries, 193 yards, 4.5 yards per carry, one touchdown. There are no other running backs that are coming back for this team, Ryan. There is not a running back that came back for the San Antonio Brahmas. Your favorite, Kalen Ballage, no longer in spring football, even though you predicted him to be the MVP.
Did I miss it when I was responding to some comments? Was it just John Levitt not still on the roster?
I don't think so. I did not see anyone that came back to this roster.
When I looked at the UFL website, John Levitt showed up on the roster as one of the running backs. Oh. He played 4 years at Baylor and played for Vegas in 2023 at 220.
No, I mean, he didn't play. There are no teams that came.
Oh, no hold on. Okay.
From last season. I wanted to pick on Kalen Ballage and your MVP pick last season, but you totally glossed over that one. That was such a great pick. Wrong again, Ryan. Another prediction that just doesn't seem to pan out. It's like Hayden Hurst getting 1,000 yards. Didn't happen.
I hate that this is a family show because I say too many things. Listen, a couple of wide receivers I want to talk about. Jontre Kirkland, wide receiver at LSU.
Yes, love it.
Drafted by the Houston Roughnecks, but put on IR after week four last season with a chest injury. He was averaging 16.9 yards a catch with four touchdowns prior to his injury. And he had a stint with the New Orleans Saints, but signed with San Antonio in January. And then Cody Latimer, a name that people should recognize because he was listed as a tight end for someone for Orlando last year. 6'3", 222-pound wide receiver out of Indiana. He won a Super Bowl 50 with the Denver Broncos. He was two-time second team All Big 12 in 2012 and 2013. Also selected in the dispersal draft. There's a couple. Oh, here's a guy. I think you may have mentioned him, and I may have just kind of zoned out when he said it. Anthony McFarland. Running back out of Maryland, I love this kid. I loved him out of college. I was upset that he didn't get more of a shot in Pittsburgh. He ran a 4.44 40-yard dash at the combine, fourth-round pick from Pittsburgh. I had high hopes for this guy in the NFL, so I really like to see what he can do for this roster.
I like it.
You know, you got a couple of Florida defensive backs on this team, right, Bill?
Nobody cares.
I care. I do.
Wait, hang on. I have that listed. Hang on. You're going to talk about Tease Tabor.
Yep.
Safety out of Florida. And also Quincy Wilson, the cornerback.
Absolutely right. Tease Tabor, two-time first-team All-SEC back in 2015 and 2016. He was a second-round NFL draft pick by my Detroit Lions back in 2017.
He's slow.
So, yeah, that's – and I think that was the knock. He didn't have a great combine. Then we look to Quincy Wilson, 6'2" cornerback out of Florida, second-round pick by the Colts in 2017. Second team all SEC in 2016, but unfortunately he was also placed on injured reserve last week. So we don't know if he'll get to play this season here in the UFL either. But listen, it's San Antonio is going to have a new look roster this season.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of here for it because they kind of needed it.
Yeah.
I thought if there was one team in the XFL out of the state of Texas that could have taken the dump for me, it would have been San Antonio.
They did return their top receiver from last season, though, Ryan. That's probably their best player to come back. It feels like Landon Akers, wide receiver, 31 catches, 303 yards last season. But like you said, Jontre Kirkland coming over. We were excited about him last year. He's that guy that played quarterback / wide receiver for LSU.
Yeah.
And when he was on the field, he was exciting as could be. I believe he was playing for Houston, right? Was it Vegas?
It was Vegas.
Yeah. Super, super exciting. Loved him. We were watching him having a lot of fun, and then he gets injured, and now I'm excited to see him play for the San Antonio Brahmas, who arguably have the best uniforms in UFL. I think they're right up there.
Well, we're to our final team, and if I don't start rooting for the DC Defenders, this will be the team that I root for.
This will be the team, only because of the fan base. It's the fan base, because it's going to be so much fun to watch.
The St. Louis Battlehawks. I believe they finished – they lost the Eastern or Southern, whatever it was, division championship game to the DC Defenders last season, and thus did not play in the XFL championship. But the St. Louis fans filled that arena. They sold out two or three games last year.
Sold out the lower bowl, which is about 36,000. And I've heard that they're going to be opening the upper deck this year. That's their expectation. It's going to be that full.
St. Louis wants football in town.
And they're letting the NFL know they screwed up is what it is.
Yeah. Head coach Anthony Beck gets a second year at the helm for St. Louis. The biggest name returning, and you're probably going to talk about him more than I will, AJ McCarron, quarterback of Alabama, came back, left the NFL, to come to the XFL last year. It was a huge story because he took a major pay cut so that his family and his kids could watch him play quarterback. And all he did was lead the XFL in passing touchdowns, completion percentage, and passer rating.
Yards.
Obviously, yeah.
Oh, no, yards. he's second in yards. He's behind DiNucci.
Obviously, three-time national champion with Alabama. This is a direct quote from somewhere I read about A.J. McCarron, a website talking about what he did last year in the XFL. In his final game of the 2023 regular season, McCarron went 28 of 35 on the day, throwing for 420 yards and 6 touchdowns. The yardage and touchdowns is the most in a single game by an XFL passer in league history. He also set a league record for single-season touchdown passes that season with 24, and I'm sure they're going to somehow merge the record books with the USFL and the XFL.
Right.
But yeah. AJ McCarron was that feel-good story that everybody wanted to hear last season, right?
Oh, he had me at, I want to play so my kids can see me play. It said he could have been a backup or a third stringer on an NFL roster. That could have happened. He wanted to play, and he wanted his kid. I love it. I love it. That made me, I fell in love with the guy immediately, and not just because he has a super beautiful wife that Brent Musburger drooled over in a game way back at Alabama. Remember that? Do you remember that? Look it up on YouTube. It's hilarious.
I do. It was terrible.
I love AJ McCarron. It's fantastic. I cannot wait. Like you said, I feel the exact same way about these teams. I'm leaning towards the DC Defenders just because I love that fan base, and I think it's going to be really cool. Tom, who's awesome. But AJ McCarron, I love St. Louis. The issue I have with St. Louis is they have the worst uniforms. That all blue, I can't deal with it. But what a fun team. There's a lot more to talk about. So let's jump all over this team real quick. Do you want to talk about running backs very quickly?
Yeah, let's do it.
I have it as Brian Hill did not return. We remember Brian Hill. He was pretty fantastic for this team. He did not return. Mateo Durant is the best returning running back they had last season. Durant had 39 carries for 117 yards, 3.0 average. But we don't care. You want to know why? Because they picked up a man named Wayne Gallman out of Clemson. Go ahead. You're probably excited about this. There's Homer. It's sitting in your face. Like, oh, the Homer's happening.
I did want to mention real quick. I don't know if you knew this. Mateo Durant played high school at McCormick High School. That's upstate South Carolina. That's right down the street. Yeah. So he was first team all ACC back in 2021. But yeah, you mentioned Wayne Gallman, running back out of Clemson, 6 foot, 210 pound running back, second team all ACC back in 2015 and 2016. He had 3,400 yards, 34 touchdowns at Clemson. He was a fourth round pick by the Giants. He kind of caught on in the NFL, signed with a few different teams. Mainly when the starting running back went down, Gallman came in and played really well in relief. So a couple of phenomenal
I've got those
running
stats,
backs.
Ryan.
Yeah, I've let's hear. Stats. Let's hear
that
his
was,
NFL.
That
stats.
Was actually in 2020, so that was in 2020. It's not that long ago.
Well, that was when Saquon went down, right?
No, so he was replaced by Saquon.
Okay, so yeah, that's right. So then he went out west and played with San Francisco and a couple other teams.
But 2020 was his best season. He had 682 yards rushing and averaged 4.6 yards per carry. He was actually really good, and I still talk to this day. I don't understand why they drafted Saquon where they did when they had Gallman already on the roster. They just didn't seem to want to play the guy, but had a great final season in the NFL. He finished his career at 1,548 yards and 9 touchdowns, averaged 4.2 yards per carry in 5 seasons. Another guy that's on this roster. Let's jump away from running backs because you love this guy, and I know you're excited about this. The giant man himself, Hakeem Butler, returns. Jumping up and down because you love this guy last year. 51 catches, 599 yards, 8 touchdowns, and he is massive. He tried to catch on, I think, with Pittsburgh. Was it Pittsburgh he that he was going to camp with this year?
He made the final cuts. He didn't make it. But yeah, 6 foot five, 227 pound wide receiver out of Iowa State. He was a fourth round pick by the Cardinals back in 2019. But he was a huge target, man. He was so good for St. Louis
super
last
fun to
year.
Watch.
You talk about wide receivers. Here's a guy, Darius Shepherd, a wide receiver out of North Dakota State.
Yep.
5'11", 186 pounds, a small guy, but last season was all XFL and he was the XFL special teams player of the year. He had an 80-yard, I think, punt return at one point last season, ran a bunch of kicks back. I mean, dude's speedy, but there's a guy that we mentioned a second ago, before we got to this team,
I know what you're going to say.
You know what? Before we do that, I'm going to throw out another homer pick here because it's the only team in the UFL that has a South Carolina player and a Clemson player on the roster. Kobe Smith, defensive tackle out of South Carolina, won a Super Bowl ring with the Tom Brady Tampa Bay Buccaneers back in Super Bowl, was it Super Bowl 40 or 49, whatever LV was. 17 starts, 84 tackles, 7 tackles for loss, 2 sacks at South Carolina. So I just, again, there's 2 Gamecocks in the UFL, and I had to talk them out. But let's get back to this wide receiver talk here, because this guy was, you know, was all world for the XFL last year.
This guy was awesome. Can't believe he ended up on this team. I can't believe he ended up on this team. Picked up in the dispersal draft from the Seattle Sea Dragons. I think he led the UFL or the XFL in receiving last season. Had 60 catches for 670 yards and 4 touchdowns. Jakor Pearson. I cannot believe he's so tiny out of Ole Miss. It looks like he doesn't even belong on the field. He's such a small guy. But he finds his way open, catches the ball every time. Yeah, he's tiny, tiny. And, man, I cannot believe he's going to St. Louis, where he will probably thrive with basically the best quarterback in the UFL. I would think AJ McCarron would be considered the best quarterback in the UFL. Very, very exciting to see the wide receiver crew that the St. Louis Battlehawks put together. And picking up Wayne Gallman as the running back, man, it's going to be a fun team.
Yeah, I mean, listen, like you mentioned, he was all XFL, XFL receptions leader, receiving yards leader last year. He was second team All-Conference USA back in 2019. He was a fourth-round pick by the Seattle Sea Dragons last season. Listen, I'm with you. Dude was electric, man. Like, it was just that guy that you love to watch. And, again, that's one of the reasons why I kind of want to – I don't want to root for 2 teams in the same division. But like the 2 teams that I want to root for, DC and St. Louis,
I know.
They're guys that we know. They're talented. They're going to be high flying. They're going to be fun to watch. But yeah, a lot of fun stuff going again.
Let's get their top pick really quick. St. Louis Battlehawks top pick. I want to say this one for my dad. The top pick in the dispersal draft was Anthony Chiaffi, a defensive back from Vegas. But he played his college ball at Rutgers.
I was going to say Rutgers,
Yeah, there it is. Yeah, a Rutgers player going to be playing for the St. Louis Battlehawks. My dad would like that one. I'm sure he won't watch the UFL. He should, but he probably will a little bit. Maybe watch
it. Just baseball. Tie him down and force his eyes open.
Make him watch it.
Yeah, make him watch it. Listen.
I did want to give you one more weird thing, Ryan. One more, and I want to call it an anomaly, because you were a Houston Roughnecks fan last year, correct?
Yeah.
So in the dispersal draft, if you were to pick a team, and we're talking DC Defenders, possibly St. Louis Battlehawks, and I think we're doing that based on the fan base, because it's so much fun to watch those home games, because those teams really get the fans into the games. In the dispersal draft, the San Antonio Brahmas had 20 picks, okay? They had 20 picks in the dispersal draft. 18 of those picks were Houston Roughnecks.
Yeah.
That's so strange. And the 2 picks that weren't were a defensive tackle from the Seattle Sea Dragons and Cody Latimer, the tight end from the Orlando Guardians. Only 3 players were picked from the Orlando Guardians.
Are you surprised? They were the worst. They had one. So miraculously, we talked about how good DC was last year. Their one loss was to Orlando
Guardians. Yeah,
which was an amazing game. And they had one win all season. And it was against DC.
I still have the T-shirt.
You're gonna love this stuff.
I bought a Orlando Guardians T-shirt last season. I still have the T-shirt. I cannot wear it. I have to put it on for you one time when we're hanging out. It is the worst fitting piece of article of clothing I've ever seen in my entire life. I can't even explain it. I don't know how to explain it.
Have you seen the UFL gear on their website? It's actually pretty nice gear.
I think I'm gonna pick up a hat this season.
They've got polos on there, dude.
Yeah, I'm not going to go that far. We got to last more than one season. We can't just keep changing.
I'm with you.
Next year we have a 4-team league, and we're going to sell some more merch for those teams. Like, no, I want to make sure that they're going to survive more beyond the season. But I'll pick up a hat. I should have picked up a hat last year. We're talking. Your mom always says you have that hat collection. I do, and I should have done it last year. But I thought, you know what? A T-shirt. I'm going to rep the Orlando Guardians. I put this thing on, and it's like wearing a drape. It's the weirdest. It's got this huge collar. And like it doesn't fit around the midsection right. It just kind of flows in the wind like it's wider than the top. It's terrible. It's so terrible. I can't wear it. I was gonna wear it just for the show, and I'm like, I can't even wear it because I couldn't do it.
Terrible. By the way, did you ever watch the XFL when it was run by I'm gonna call him Voldemort back in the early 2000s when it was LA Extreme?
Yeah,
one that won the championship. Did you have a favorite team back then?
I don't think I did. Usually I do it by region. I pick a team by region. The only team that I ever had that was a weird team was when the World League was a thing way, way back. They had Scott Mitchell. I don't know if you remember him as a quarterback. He played for the Dolphins. He even played, I believe, for the Detroit Lions at one point. But he played for a team called the San Antonio Surge. And yes, and they, I believe, won the World League the one year that they had it. And I was a big Surge fan. Why was I a big Surge fan? Because their colors were teal and yellow. And they looked a lot like the Miami Dolphins.
I could see that.
I rooted for the Surge. Yeah.
No, I luckily for me, I picked up the LA Extreme back in the day and they won the championship. Yeah. And then the XFL went away for 20 years. All right, Bill, it's time. As Bruce Buffer would say, the XFL kicks off this weekend, Saturday, March 30th, 1 p.m. kickoff on Fox. The XFL champion Arlington Renegades from 2023 play host to the USFL champion Birmingham Stallions. I looked up betting odds. The Birmingham Stallions are a 3.5-point favorite at Arlington. Bill, who are you taking, Birmingham or Arlington?
I'm going to have to go against the betting odds this time. I don't feel like the Birmingham Stallions have enough. I mean, Alex Magoo is gone. So who are you having play quarterback there in Birmingham? I don't know if the Vegas folks are paying attention to that. I would think that they are. I'm going to go with Arlington in this game. I think Luis Perez is going to will them to a win.
We don't know who's going to be starting at quarterback for Birmingham.
Yep.
And Arlington caught fire at the end of the year last year. They were able to make the playoffs and win the championship. I don't know if they can pull that over, but I am going to say that they cover the spread. I don't think this is a 4-point or better game for Birmingham. Give me Arlington as well. Next up, Saturday as well, a 4:00 kickoff immediately following this game on Fox, the St. Louis Battlehawks at the Michigan Panthers. St. Louis is a 6.5-point favorite. That's how bad Michigan was last year. And I'm going to take it. We just spent a few minutes talking about how good this offense is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I like St. Louis to me is the odds-on favorite to win the UFL this year. Give me St. Louis with this big spread. Bill, what say you?
I feel good about it too. I think A.J. McCarron's going to score a lot of points. They've got a lot of returning players. He's going to have some chemistry with those players, and they're adding better, you know, Jakor Pearson, obviously. We just talked about it. Michigan's who's going to play quarterback there? We don't know. So I think St. Louis wins this game, covers the spread.
All right, let's go to the Sunday games. The Sunday games are going to be hosted on ESPN. First off, the DC Defenders at the San Antonio Brahmas, a noon kickoff on ESPN. Two former XFL division rivals, I guess you could say. The DC Defenders are a 6-point favorite on the road at San Antonio. Bill, who you got here? DC at San Antonio.
Well, DC, they kept most of that team together, right? So the only thing we're missing is Chris Blair, Lucky Jackson, you know, the receivers that we had last year that we really enjoyed watching. But they loaded up on receivers. It's not like they have bad receivers now. Tomu's back. We don't know who's really going to play. Dormady's probably going to start for the Brahmas. Feel really good? I don't think so. I don't think so. So I think we're going to watch DC cover the spread, even though it's in San Antonio.
I'm right there with you. For everything that you said, I'm just going to say ditto to this. Not to mention, Channing Smith said DC's defense is really good.
They were last year. They were.
Yep. And, you know, backed by my guy, DJ Swearinger. Let's go DC. All right. The second game on Sunday, March 31st, the 3 p.m. kickoff on ESPN. Again, immediately following the Defenders at Brahmas, the Memphis Showboats at the Houston Roughnecks. The Roughnecks are a 1-point favorite at home. I'm going to start us off here. You said a lot of good things about Memphis. And so I think Memphis is going to be able to shock everybody and take this win. Give me Memphis to cover this. I mean, it's basically a pick 'em. Give me Memphis to take Houston. Bill, what say you?
I think we have the same issue. I mean, football is based on whether or not you're going to have a good quarterback and whether or not you have good quarterback play. Houston's going to come in with probably Reed Sinet playing quarterback. How good is he going to be? We don't know. He did not play very well last year when he played for San Antonio. Case Cookus is likely going to be the starter. You talked about Josh Love possibly being the starter there. And who knows who's going to be. One of those two guys is pretty good, right? And I think probably better than what you're going to see from Houston. So I think you're going to watch Memphis win this game.
Fun opening weekend for some real live football.
Right.
You know, we all
super excited.
Listen, for years we've talked about the fact that there needs to be a feeder system to the NFL. We need more football. College football isn't enough. We all miss football around spring, summertime football. We get, I believe, 10 weeks of football here. with the UFL, not including the playoffs. So please support this league. Watch the games, because that's the only way we're going to get more than one season out of this league.
Turn the TV on and walk away like that. You don't have to actually watch the games. Just
it's about, listen, you probably like, if you're like me, you probably got weeds in your backyard. Turn the game on. Go do yard work. Leave it on. Get the ratings bump. Let Nielsen record the fact that you're watching the game, you know, and you know, go from there. Bill, we've reached the end of the show in the overtime segment. Anything else you want to touch on before we sign off here?
No. I think we're solid, man. I feel pretty good about this. I feel pretty good about what people should be watching for as they turn these games on. I think they're going to be a lot of fun. And go Yankees.
Listen, if you've joined the show with us live, or if you're listening later on, you can always go back and listen to the show later on Spotify, Apple, Google Podcast, wherever you listen to your podcast. You can always watch the video again over on Facebook.com/tapoutsandtouchdowns. Over on X at Tapouts and TDs, or YouTube at Tapouts and Touchdowns. You can always go back and rewatch the show later on. And remember, if you ever watch the show live with us at 8 o'clock on Wednesdays, leave a comment and join the conversation. Again, this was a lot of fun. We get to introduce you to the UFL and hopefully convince you to tune in as we are going to be doing. Thank you, Bill. It's your guy, Bully Rye. Thank you for spending this extra long episode learning about the UFL. Enjoy March Madness this weekend. Enjoy first pitch as the Major League Baseball opening day takes place this weekend. And most of all, enjoy opening weekend of the UFL. For Banker Bill, it's your guy, Bully Rye, and we'll see you next time right here on Tap Outs and Touchdowns.